Hey, that's a great song to really lead us into this next, this just kind of teaching time. We're going to talk really openly and honestly about some things, but to really summarize it all, this is it, that our heart would sing no other name but Jesus. That's it. Like that we would love Jesus that much that our hearts could cling to him and nothing else. And that we wouldn't look to all the other substitutes that are trying to fill our lives other than him. Like, I love that phrase. My heart will sing no other song. All right, here's the deal. I hope you have a Bible. But even more than that, I hope you have a pen. Because more so than really jumping into one particular passage, I'm going to give you about 80 things to write down. And then you can go back and really read through it a lot later, or even in small groups, you can talk about it. We're going to answer a few of the questions that you guys gave us. I know if you saw in the email this week, I kind of posted a summary of top struggles for girls, top struggles for guys, and then all the questions. All the questions that y'all came and said, hey, we want answers to these, we're going to answer them. And so we'll really answer them over the next four times that we meet in here. But we'll answer about six or seven of them tonight, which will be fun. So hopefully you have a pen, something to write on. If not, just write on your hand or your neighbor's face, something. Who knows? All right. Big idea. This is really not about sex. This is about intimacy. Okay? Intimacy, really even God gives us sex. The goodness of sex and our sexuality and all that it entails is meant to communicate something with us. And God's using the sexual language to be able to communicate intimacy. And then what he does through giving us sex within marriage is gives us a covenant relationship, a permanent, exclusive relationship to be able to experience really the heightened awareness and pleasures of what sex is. Okay? So this is about intimacy. Everything we talk about tonight is about intimacy. And I want you to keep coming back to that and not just the act of sex, okay? Good? All right, here we go. We know that sex is designed by God as a way to know him more. Like, that's the goal. That he's given us this incredible blessing so that we can know him more and we can have this sense of longing for someone that God actually meets on a deeper level. That's what sex is. You're going to see this in Genesis 2. As soon as Eve is created out of Adam, it says that two become one flesh. You're going to hear that phrase all the time when we start talking about marriage. And really what happens, two become one flesh, is the idea that something emotional, something physical, something relational is happening to create this oneness in this marriage, right? Now, sex is going to reinforce that over and over again. But here's what's cool. Like Genesis 24, when Isaac gets his wife, Rebecca, like somebody from Abraham's family has gone to get Rebecca and brings him back. He's never met her before. She comes, he sees her, and then it says that he takes her into the tent, that he knows her, and that she becomes his wife. And that word, to know her, means they have consummated their marriage. Even somebody that he's never seen before, he is committing himself to for the rest of his life. And that's the context of where it happens. It's the same thing that in Exodus 20, when God's given the Ten Commandments, one of the big ones is, do not commit adultery. Because that adultery act is so personal to God. It is so relational and it is so intimate that he doesn't want you experiencing that with anybody else except for your one spouse, okay? All right, so check this out. One of the things we talked about this weekend was the brokenness of sin, how sin comes in and destroys everything. It fractures everything. And so Jeremiah 17:9 says this. It says, the heart is the most deceitful of all things and desperately wicked. Who really knows how bad it is? All right, here's the deal. If this is true, if because of sin, our heart is really the center of who we are, where all of our desires come from, if our heart is the most wicked of all things and the most deceitful, how much should we trust ourselves? None, right? All right, so when we start talking about some of these issues, the tendency is because it's not that we just started talking about them. We've been talking about these issues for years. But usually there's this gut reaction where somebody gets really defensive. And when you're getting really defensive, really what you're saying is, hey, I don't need your advice. I got this. I got this taken care of. I'm good. And what you're really saying is, hey, you can tell me what you want. My heart's good. I'm content where I am. And Jeremiah 17:9 is really a wake-up call to be able to go, hey, if you feel like you trust yourself, you better not. Because I know from personal experience, the more I trust myself, the more I destroy myself. So Jeremiah 17:9 should give us a great, really, motivation to actually believe Jesus at his words in Mark 8. Whenever he says, hey, you want to follow me? He says, deny yourself, take up your cross and follow me. So the act of denying yourself, the act of sacrificing yourself, the act of actually believing that my heart is the most wicked and I can even deceive myself is the biggest reason that we need to go, Jesus, please give us clarity on this issue. So that's what we're doing. Just right off the bat, though, I want to say, hey, let's not trust ourselves at all. And any sense of defensiveness that comes up, let's recognize, hey, that could be a wicked heart. It may not be, but let's at least be willing to go, it could be my heart. Okay? All right. The goal of sex is connection. Now, I know there's multiple goals, but ultimately, the goal of sex is connection, right? I mean, pleasure, yes. Procreation, that means having babies, yes, absolutely. But connection is huge. And here's how I know. You can just have a basic argument with this. If Carrie gets in a big car wreck tomorrow and she's paralyzed and we can never have sex for the rest of our lives, does that mean my responsibility as her husband is gone? No, of course not. So even if we can't have physical intimacy, I can still pursue her relationally and emotionally to create that same intimacy, right? Sex is a privilege. We've been married 8 years. Carrie dies tomorrow. Then what happens to me? Instantly, I go back to being single and then having to steward my sexuality in a different way from being married. So sex ultimately is about connection, okay? So here's the thing. Here's the first question we're going to answer because I know almost all of you wrote this down. And so here's the question. What constitutes sexual activity? What all does sex entail? All right. Here's what I've noticed with high school students, okay? Sex itself, all of us should know, sex is much more than just the act of intercourse. Sex is a very big process. I mean, we just said, it's relational, it's emotional, it's physical. It's got all of those things. It's going to contain all of this intimacy. But what I'll notice with high school students is you want to allow somebody, girls, you want to allow somebody to pursue you, and then, because you want to be captivating. You want to be affirmed in that way. Guys, in the same way, you want to pursue, you want to actually know that you have what it takes to win the heart of a woman. And when those two things meet, really what happens is this. You want to create all this sexual energy. And then once all your sexual energy is ramped up, then you want to learn where you're supposed to draw the line. All right, well, now that we got all this sexual energy going, now how much am I allowed to do before I get married, right? I mean, that's the question. That's always the question. Where's the line? How far is too far? You word it however you want. That's what it is. And so here's what I want to tell you. If we're looking at this biblically, Ephesians 5, verse 3, is going to say that there should be no sexual immorality in God's people. No sexual immorality, no impurity, nothing. That word for sexual immorality is the word porneia. Same place we get pornography from. But that word porneia, here's what it means about sexual immorality. It is all-encompassing about creating any type of sexual energy outside of marriage. Any type. So you want to define what sexual activity is? Here's my best definition. You ready for this? It's not the act of intercourse. It is anything that gets you on the on-ramp toward orgasm. That's what it is. Anything that creates a physical excitement or gets you going, whether it's physically or mentally or whatever it is, anything that happens is what God would classify as this has no place except for in the context of a marriage relationship. So now, where do you draw the line? Well, you can kind of use that as a grid for whatever you want to do. You want to talk about touching each other? I would guess that's going to get your motor going. I would guess that's going to get those desires really ramped up. That's sex. You want to talk about making out. I would guess that idea of making out is even something that's really getting your motor running. That's sex. You want to talk about holding hands. I don't know where you land on that. For some of y'all, you might be like, you know what? I can hold hands and I'm good. For some of y'all, holding hands, that physical touch may get everything running and you're going to have to go, no, I can't do that. For some of you, it's going to be in your words. For some of you, it's the way that you flirt. It's actually sexual activity. It could be any number of things, but I want you to hear this clearly. God's standard, if you're going to have sexual integrity, God's standard is that there would be not even a hint of sexual immorality. And in order to have not even a hint, the question is not, hey, where do we draw the line? The question is, how do I keep myself from building all this sexual energy? Now, I'll give you this disclaimer. The sexual desires that you have, there's actually nothing wrong with them. Okay? You are built as a sexual being. All of you as high school students, most of you are about 14 to 18 years old, somewhere in there. Most of you are actually in the prime of where you're at sexually, as far as what your body's concerned. The problem is, culturally, unless you're planning on getting married soon, you got to do something with those desires. Most of y'all are going, well, you know what? I want to graduate, and then I want to go to college, and then I'll get married somewhere after that. Well, then you better really be on guard about the different types of sexual energy you're allowing your body to create. It's only in the context of marriage that you allow yourself to create any type of sexual energy. Make sense? All right, you can ask questions about that later. But, all right, here's the deal. If you're in the sermon this weekend, you heard Matt define sexual integrity. And here's what he said. He said, all of your sexual energy and activity goes toward your spouse. That's a really good definition. Obviously, you don't have a spouse, most of you, I don't think. And so all of your sexual energy and activity, where's it go? Y'all are looking at me like you want me to tell you. You're like, I don't know. Where should it go? All right, that's what we're going to talk about. But here is what I want to tell you too. Somebody asked another question about this. Definition of sexual integrity, and then what's the difference between sexual purity and integrity? The real answer is that sexual purity and sexual integrity could really be the same thing. They could really be used interchangeably. But here's one thing that integrity does communicate that purity doesn't. The idea of being sexually pure gives this sense of you've never done anything wrong, right? Well, the truth is, I would bet there's very few people here who have never done anything wrong sexually, who are completely pure. So what integrity actually communicates for us is this idea that integrity is you are being true to who you claim to be. Like, integrity is not just pure, but it's whole. It's that you are the same person in public as you are in private. Okay? So anything that happens out here is the same thing that happens in your bedroom. Anything that happens here is the same thing that happens at your house when nobody's there. That's the idea of integrity. But the thing is, if we're not fully pure, we know that God can redeem us and make us pure. But at the same time, the idea of integrity is that there has to be this transparency within you. A lot of us will talk about the need for accountability. That's true. You do need good accountability. But you need to be transparent and the way that you handle your sexual integrity. That's one thing it means, that you are going to have these desires and you have to deal with them in a way where somebody else knows what's going on. Somebody who you trust, somebody who's probably older than you, who can mentor you and speak into you, same way we do small groups, same way that your small group leaders are prepared tonight to go, all right, how are you struggling specifically? And we're going to go around and talk about that. But sexual integrity gives this idea that even when we're not pure, we can repent, we can move toward God, and we can actually maintain that integrity. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense. Sorry, I'm trying not to cough in the microphone. All right, here's the deal. Two biggest challenges, I told you earlier, lust and modesty. And so we're going to tackle both of them, and we're going to tackle both of them for girls and guys, because some of you just thought, all right, guys struggle with lust, girls struggle with modesty. Not true. Guys struggle with lust, girls struggle with lust. Girls struggle with modesty, guys struggle with modesty, even though it's something nobody really ever talks about. Some of you girls just went, praise the Lord. At least we're not just talking about girls here. So here we go. Lust. Let me give you a definition of it. Lust is a strong desire for what you don't have and what you weren't meant to have. Now, lust can be non-sexual. A lot of times in the Old Testament, what we'll see it as is really coveting. You are coveting something else. There is this strong impulse and desire for something that you don't have and you weren't meant to have. But at the same time, in our context especially, it is sexual. It is craving sexually what God has not given to you and will never give to you. Okay? If all of our sexual energy and our activity, and I love how that is, energy and activity, meaning all your thoughts, desires, and even how you respond to those actions, if all of that is going to be applied to our spouse, and we're not married now, it's going to be our future spouse, then lust is going to play a huge role in this, okay? It's craving something, it's really craving someone who's not yours, not your spouse. You're never going to covenant yourself to them. And even not that you're not covenanted to them right now. Okay? Like we always talk about commitment before intimacy. I know you've heard that phrase before. But my fear is that we'll hear some things here, even in the church context, we'll go, well, you know what? I can create some intimacy because I am committed to her or I am committed to him. The problem is you're in an exclusive high school relationship that is not permanent. When we say commitment before intimacy, it's got to be exclusive and it's got to be permanent. If it's not permanent, then there's no reason, there's no basis to actually grow or pursue any of that intimacy. All right, so listen to this. The sad thing about lust, and this is what our world has no comprehension for. The sad thing about lust is that the payoff for lust is always more lust. Like sometimes I'm talking to some different guys, even around here, and I get this feeling that what they're saying is, I just need to get married, and then all this lust will go away. Like that could not be further from the truth. Lust, by definition, it is this insatiable desire. It is this desire that cannot be satisfied, but you are longing for it over and over again. By you getting married and being able to have sex, it is not going to remove your lust, I promise you. There are plenty of guys, men, who are married and struggling with lust even more when they're married than when they weren't. I promise. Girls, actually the same way. Plenty of women who are struggling with lust more once they're married than when they're not. So it's actually something we have to deal with now while we're single and not feel like we can wait until we're married and then deal with it. So listen to this. Y'all like Screwtape Letters? I feel like I always talk about Screwtape Letters. I'm a big fan, if you can't tell. That's why we did the thing back in the fall. Listen to this quote from Screwtape Letters. This is really Satan writing a letter to the demon, okay? Just listen. I know it's a creative twist on it, but listen. God made the pleasures. All our research so far has not enabled us to produce one, meaning hasn't been able to produce a pleasure. Said, all we can do as demons is to encourage the humans to take the pleasures which our enemy has produced at a time or in ways or in degrees in which he is forbidden. That's really Satan's plan with lust, is that you are created as a sexual being and that all they can do, God's given us the sexual, really, characteristic to be able to know intimacy and pursue him. And all that Satan and really the darkness can do is take that good pleasure and twist it into something that drives us into wanting to use it outside of God's reign at a time or in a way that is not right. That's all it can do. So it's a really interesting quote, but I think he's dead on. Now, here's the thing. The idea of lust, what's the opposite of lust? Do y'all know? Think about this. This is actually a really hard question. If your goal was just to stop lusting, a lot of us don't know what would be on the other side, right? We're just thinking, all right, well, I guess I would be doing nothing. If I wasn't doing lust, I just need to stop. And that's actually the key to why we're not overcoming this. The opposite of lust is satisfaction. Some people would say contentment, but I don't think contentment's a strong enough word. The opposite of lust is being satisfied, because lust in itself is actually dissatisfaction. You are not satisfied with something, and you are pursuing something that is not yours. All right, so let's talk to the guys. You want to talk to the guys? This will be good. Guys actually probably know what's coming. All right, guys are highly visual. Y'all know that? I think by this point, y'all know that. Safe to say. Highly visual, lots of testosterone, especially guys that are all beefed up, you know. I like it. All right, two big ways that guys are going to struggle with lust. I don't even know what was said, but I'm not going to pretend to. One is eyes. Your eyes are going to have to come under control if you want to have sexual integrity. Even Job in chapter 31 is going to say, I've made a covenant with my eyes not to look lustfully on a woman. Really, not to look lustfully on anyone, whether it's a woman or a same-sex attraction. So our eyes are constantly undressing other people, entertaining thoughts, looking at things that we shouldn't look at. I mean, the whole basis of pornography, like, is that it completely gives us something that's not ours, and it's a complete lie. And not only that, it desensitizes us to what any sense of reality could really be like. If you ever think that by you looking at porn would actually give you some expectation or some sense of what it would be like to be married, I can assure you, you are completely wrong. Porn has nothing to do with marriage, nothing to do with intimacy. And if you could see the stories of the people who are trapped in the pornography industry, you would be appalled. You ever seen the movie Taken? You ever seen that movie? That movie freak you out? Yeah. You know what's really freaky about it? It's real. It is completely real. And when you think about this, and this is one of my own little soapbox things, those of you who are really looking at porn all the time, one, it desensitizes you, but two, you're supporting one of the biggest evils in this world. Because over 50% of the women that are even in pornographic images or videos on the internet are actually in slavery, like physical slavery, where they are being drugged and held to do that over and over again. It's kind of hard to look at porn whenever that's what you see, right? Hopefully that's appalling to you in the same way it is for me. But for guys, if we're gonna deal with lust, we got to deal with our eyes, what we're looking at, what we're feeding ourselves, and then we really got to deal with our thoughts. It is too easy to be able to replay an image or replay something in your mind, to entertain a thought in your mind. Even if it's a fantasy, something that you wish would happen, even if it's something that you've seen 10 years ago, it's amazing how easy it is to replay that in your mind. And so what we have to do, 2 Corinthians 10:5, write that down. You have to capture every rebellious thought. You have to capture every single thought and make that thought obey Christ. If you want to name no other name but Jesus, then that's what we got to do, and we got some work to do. But at the core, for guys, I want you to hear this. Any sense of lust is completely selfish and is creating this habit within you to where you're asking the question, what can I get? Marriage is completely about what can I give, not what can I get. So you need to start creating some habits of how can I give myself away, not how can I get the things I want. All right? Let's deal with the girls really quick. We said the standard was not even a hint of sexual immorality. Girls, physical, visual, I know you're not quite as visual, but I can guarantee you this. I've seen the numbers and I've heard the stories. Girls are looking at porn just as much as guys are. And this should scare you. It's actually proven that girls are more likely to act on what they see than guys are. That's a scary thought. It's a really scary thought. So there's this physical, visual piece of where girls will undress guys with their eyes in just the same way. You may not be completely looking for the same end result, but it's still there. And it is very much a lustful thought. And it's amazing how quickly it can enslave you. Not just that, it's amazing how, here's one of the big distinctions with guys and girls. Girls actually will lust after people in a sexual way, but at the same time, girls have this beauty that is captivating. And one of the biggest things that girls will lust after is someone who they think is more beautiful or more captivating than them. Okay? You ever experienced this? You don't have to nod your head. Sorry, I didn't mean to ask that question. But it's actually proven. Girls will lust after someone who they think is more beautiful than them because they want their body to be more captivating than they really are. We said lust was this really strong desire that cannot be controlled. It usually is craving sexually what you don't have. And that idea of captivating, being captivating, it is huge. I read one article where it said if a beautiful woman walked out on the stage, the 9 times out of 10, if you polled everybody in the room, the guys want the body, the girls want the body. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but on paper it actually made a lot of sense. It's saying the girls are really lusting after the body to be more captivating for everybody. The guys just want the body. The guys just want to really see the end result. So it's an interesting way of looking at it. But here's the other thing. It's not just physical visual. It's relational. It's romantic. It is, our world has created this complete false image of what it looks like to be in a relationship. It's the bachelor effect. Those of y'all who love Juan Pablo right now, right? Everybody's got it on DVR. I know you do. Here's the thing. Matt said it this morning. He didn't say it last night, but he said, I mean, what guy couldn't just knock your socks off if he had unlimited money and could take you on all the dates he wanted to, right? But there's this unrealistic expectation that we get, especially girls, where you are placing your hopes in something that was, one, not godly, and two, just completely unhealthy. We've got to make our standards actually be godly standards. And even 1 Timothy 6:6 is going to say, godliness with contentment is great gain. So the things that we're inviting in, girls, the things that we're inviting into us, the expectations that we're building in our mind of what marriage is going to be like, or even how we feel like we deserve to be treated now, we've got to reevaluate those based on godliness. Okay? The God standards and the world standards on that issue are two completely different things. And let me tell you this, just as a warning. I'm not saying this is some big sin, but just as a warning. The way you ask people to prom is quickly spiraling into this. Like, I'm noticing year after year where people feel like they got to go all out and create this just immaculate way to ask somebody to prom and then video it so that you can put it on Instagram and then get all these likes. It is quickly like losing the whole idea of even a brother and sister having a neat experience and going and enjoying the night is quickly going, oh, what do I deserve? I deserve more than that. I'm entitled to more of that. I want you to watch that. I really do. I'm not saying that the whole act is wrong. Guys should be creative as they pursue girls. But if your heart is displeased or you feel entitled to that, I'm telling you right now, it's sin and you better get it checked out. So, all right, we're gonna actually split up in a little while to be able to talk specifically for guys and girls. But I do want to tell you this: y'all were asking how do you actually fight sexual sin and how do you find pleasure in God? And Matt said it this weekend: if this sexual energy that you have is not actually bad, I mean, it is going to come. The hormones in your body are starting to ramp up. You are feeling those desires. We have to capture those thoughts, capture those desires, and make them obey Christ, okay? But on top of that, what you have to do with that energy is not let it go sexual, but actually keep it untranslated, is the word Matt used, and I love that word, untranslated from sexual energy into just energy. And one of the things we do so much here as a church is we talk about men's roles and women's roles or even core capacities. So for guys, if you're capturing those sexual thoughts and then you're going, how do I use this energy not to pursue sexual things, but to actually go, all right, how do I make that sexual energy wait till later and then spend that energy on something else? Those core capacities, pursue, provide, protect for the guys. You can put all of your energy into those things, okay? But it's not going to be with somebody of the opposite sex 9 times out of 10. You can pursue, provide, protect. You can build friendships. You can give yourself away for the sake of others. You can be strong for someone else. You can learn what real strength is and actually do it, but not in the context of a relationship. Those are all things you can use that energy for. For girls, same thing. You can invite, nurture, partner. I mean, you can use all of your energy toward doing those things, but not in a way that pursues intimacy with another boy or a girl, but in a way that pursues intimacy with Christ, right? We said from the beginning, this is all about intimacy. It's just a matter of how we actually spend that energy. And then the other thing I wanted you to write down, Colossians 3:10. This is huge, because it's not just about when you're tempted and finding pleasure in God. God's pleasures are wrapped up in his character, okay? Like, when you understand God's character, the fact that he's eternal, he's all-knowing, he is all-powerful, he is completely loving, he desires for all to be saved. When you understand all those things, and then you go, God, I want you to actually produce that in me. That's when you're fully satisfied, and that's when you find pleasure in God. But Colossians 3:10 says, put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and become like him. Put on your new nature and be renewed as you learn to know your Creator and be like him. Even two verses later in verse 12, it says, so clothe yourselves with tenderhearted mercy, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. What are those things? It's God's character. And he's saying, clothe yourselves with those things. The more that you do that, the more you will be fighting sexual sin, and definitely the more you will be finding satisfaction and pleasure in Christ. Okay? All right, let's jump to modesty. Actually, I had two questions I was going to answer for you really quick that y'all asked. One was, why is sex so prevalent in our world? How do we change our desires or behavior when it's everywhere? Really good question, because it is. It is completely everywhere. You can't get on Twitter or Vine or Facebook or even hang out with a team or do band practice, whatever it is. It is going to be covered in this stuff. We said it's the most easily accessible idol that there is. But what we just said, how do you stay pure? Captivate every thought? Make it obey Christ? And then what I would really say, how do you stay pure in every situation? Here's the answer. You've got to get to a point where you see through the garbage. Okay? This looks really appealing to a lot of you because it's all our world has to say and offer. This is going to sound extreme, but if some of your friends pulled up in the parking lot whenever we were leaving church tonight and said, hey, come with us. We're going to go do some heroin and get high. Like, y'all can laugh right now because you're like, that is ridiculous. But you see what happened? Like, you see through the garbage of what it is. You know that heroin would destroy you, for one. You had no control over yourself, and it can completely enslave you, and it is giving something else really control over your body, right? I mean, like, for me as a pastor, if I discredit myself, chances are it's not because I'm going and getting high and doing heroin all the time, right? That seems extreme. But I see through the garbage of what it is. I don't think we really see through the garbage of what lust and sexual sin is. I don't think we realize how much of a hold it actually has on us and how much we're enslaved to it. And if we can get to the point where we actually see through the garbage of what it is, even when you are around it, you won't feel tempted. You'll actually be a little bit disgusted. And I think that will then dictate your behavior. That makes sense? Hope so. I'll answer the second question too. Look at this next one. I know where this one came from too. Is it sinful to dwell on thoughts about marital sex? And if so, what should we be filling our thoughts with instead? Hey, good question. Because here's what some people are saying is if sex within marriage is so good, would it be a bad thing for me to go ahead and think about those kind of thoughts? Well, maybe. But here's the thing. I would have a hard time believing you can actually dwell on thoughts about marital sex without attaching someone to it. And if you don't know who your spouse is, then all you're doing is lusting after someone else, right? So the answer is no. There's no chance you could actually do that. If you could prove me wrong, I'd be open to hearing it, but I don't think there's any chance you could actually do that. What should you be filling your thoughts with instead? That's what we just said. God's character, using that energy to actually pursue him and make an impact on others. That's it. All right, modesty. Here you go. Definition really quick. We got about three more minutes. Modesty is presenting yourself in a way that honors God and serves others in love. All right. This is where I would anticipate some people start to get defensive, All right, the first part, lust, is pretty clear. Modesty gets a little bit gray in some areas. But turn real quick to 1 Timothy. I want to show you this. 1 Timothy chapter 2. I can't find 1 Timothy. It's before Hebrews and Titus and 2 Timothy. 1 Timothy chapter 2. Y'all there? All right, look at verse 8. I want to read you these three verses. 1 Timothy 2, verse 8. In every place of worship, I want men to pray with holy hands lifted up to God, free from anger and controversy. And I want women to be modest in their appearance. They should wear decent and appropriate clothing and not draw attention to themselves by the way they fix their hair or by wearing gold or pearls or expensive clothes. For women who claim to be devoted to God should make themselves attractive by the good things they do. All right, here's the thing. In this passage, 1 Timothy, he's writing a letter to this church where there's a ton of wealth. Even in the culture, there's a ton of wealth. And the women of the church are actually, it's not that they're not wearing enough clothes. They're actually wearing really extravagant clothes that actually show how wealthy they are, if that makes sense. They're actually wearing too much clothes. It even says that their hair is so big and fixed up to be able to draw attention to themselves. So when he's saying that you should be modest in your appearance, here's what he's really saying. You shouldn't be drawing attention to yourself. If you represent Christ, then the way that you dress and the way that you carry yourself, the way that you talk, the way that you relate to other people, the way that your suggestive behavior, your mannerisms, whatever it is, all of that should show that you are not drawing attention to yourself, but you're representing Christ. That's what it means to be modest, okay? So in these times, they're not looking at it and going, well, your shorts got to be to your fingertips, and you can't wear a bikini, and you can't do all these things. They're not worried about that. That's something unique to our culture. But what they are worried about is this. You, by the way you carry yourself, if you are modest, have an opportunity to draw attention to God by your good deeds and by the way you carry yourself. But in our context, if you choose to dress in such a way or to act in such a way that draws attention to yourself, then you cannot point them towards God. You just can't. So there's going to be some gray area on this, but here's what I would say. I know this is always a big girl issue. This pertains to guys as well. There's a lot of guys that, man, they will stress over what they wear. They will make sure they are decked out in all the right stuff, and their clothes, some of y'all are laughing. Their clothes are extravagant. They're communicating something about, hey, look at me. I got it really going on. That is immodest behavior, okay? Same way with girls. The way you dress, you want to get defensive about how low-cut your shirt is or how short your shorts are or how you should be able to wear a bikini because one pieces are too tight anyway. You can say whatever you want. I'm not here to argue with you. I am telling you this. You want to represent Christ and have sexual integrity, then you have to do something with this. How do you honor God with your life and the way you dress? How do you honor God and actually serve others in love? We just said, guys are really visual. Girls, you're on the hook for that. One of the biggest complaints I ever hear from the girls is this. Why do we have to worry so much about modesty and guys can just wear whatever they want? Y'all said that before? Shake your head yes, because I've heard it from every single one of you. Here's the answer. And it's what we were talking about earlier. Girl, like the feminine body and the females themselves have a way of showing beauty that is captivating in a way that guys don't. I'm not saying some of these guys aren't studs. I know they're studs. We'll pat them on the back later. But I'm saying that for females, you have a God-given ability just to exude beauty by the way you look. And modesty is such a big deal because you actually have to steward that. And here's how I know your heart's not fully right on it. Because it shouldn't be a problem. It's actually a privilege. it shouldn't be something you complain about. It should be a privilege that you embrace and go, how can I serve the guys I'm around by being modest? Now, here's the other thing for you girls that this really drives me insane, and I have a little girl now, and I can't wait till she's a teenager so I can beat her over the head with the same thing. But here's the thing. Here's the thing that's really creepy, for real. Girls that think they can wear what they want to wear and attract the attention and energy from guys that they want, you don't get to decide who gives you the attention. And this is the really creepy part. Because I don't care if a guy's 13 or if he's 60. You're capturing his eyes and you're really firing something up that you don't want anything to do with. When you dress immodestly, you do not get to choose who looks at you. And that's, again, a really disturbing fact. So here's the thing. We're about to split up. But I want you to know this. The idea of sexual integrity, it is not something you're missing out on. I want you to remember these words, waiting in faith. Okay? You are saying no now, but not forever. You have something so powerful to where you're going, God, how do I put all this energy into you? Because that is ultimately what life is all about. The answer is not getting married. For some of us, we're going to be single for the rest of our lives, and you get to maintain your sexual integrity that whole time. And I promise you, as you pursue intimacy with Jesus, it will be a joy for you. Singleness is a very high calling. But for those of you who are going to get married, some of you, I'll get to be a part of your wedding day. Some of you, I know you really well, and that's a joy for me to think about. In anywhere from a few years to a decade down the road, you're going to be getting married. And I can promise you, if I'm standing there with you or whoever's standing there with you, you will never regret the things that you didn't do now on your wedding day. I promise. So here's what I want you to hear and be really, really clear. Sexual integrity is the biggest blessing in the world. For where you can wait in faith, where you can really believe that Jesus has more for you than you could ever imagine, and you're going to be willing to say no now. So use that energy to pursue Christ, pursue intimacy with him and not someone else, and then wait in faith, and then use all that extra energy to impact other people. Use all that extra energy to build friendships, to make a difference in somebody's life. And when you do that, you will see your character start to reflect Christ. That is better than anything that anybody could ever give you. I promise. So here's what we've got in the back, or maybe over here somewhere. On your way out, you're going to get a chapter from a book. One of the books that I love. It's called A Hole in Our Holiness. We talked about holiness last week. This chapter is like 9 pages. Hopefully you can read 9 pages. I know it's exam week. Carve out some time and read these 9 pages. This chapter is all about, it's called Saints and Sexual Immorality, okay? It's how do God's people deal with sexual temptation and how are we supposed to be holy in these moments. I want you to read it this week and we're going to talk about it next week. But I want to give you this preface, okay? Because this guy says some really, really blunt things, okay? When you read it, you're going to be like, I've never heard anybody say something that blunt in my life. And I promise you, it's for a really good thing. All of our leaders have read it. They even recommend it. It's really good. But just to make sure you understand what I'm saying, like one of the things he's even going to say is that why is it so weird for us to go look at pornography on the internet? And then like if someone were to come up to you on the beach and be like, hey, could you just sit here and stare at me for a while? Like how creepy that is. Like that's really one of the things he says. And he's really awakening us to go, hey, we have to pursue holiness with our sexual integrity. This is going to be a good thing. All right. I'm going to go ahead and say you don't have any questions. But here's what we're going to do. All the guys, after I pray, are going to get up and go to the north end. All the girls are going to stay in here for a few minutes before we go to small groups. If you have any questions you want to ask, follow-up questions, girls, you can ask Meredith. She'll answer everything you want to know. If it's something I said, she can read my mind anyway, so she'll be good. Guys, you can ask whatever questions you want to me, but we're going to talk for just a few minutes and then send you off to small groups. So let me pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for being here in this moment. We know that your Spirit is indwelling this place. And God, I pray that your Spirit right now would really make these truths sink into our soul. I pray that your Spirit would provide conviction and that we would be willing to get honest with where we're at. And it's a scary thought to think that we could be enslaved to sin. But God, we know that if we're not on the offensive, then sin is actually creeping in on us. So God, help us get honest tonight. Help us actually see your standard and not be defensive, but actually be overjoyed that we get the opportunity to trust you and to wait in faith, knowing that you are completely faithful. All the promises you've given us, you're going to hold every one of them true. So God, in regards to lust and modesty, convict our hearts. Help us follow you. Help us repent well, and may we experience your love tonight. Amen.